Okay, so when we speak of syncretism, we're talking about, generally speaking, a mixture of two or more things. Usually the term syncretism is used in reference to spiritual practices. Now you have different environments in which the syncretism can take place and different things that can cause it to take place as well. So in this, let's start with a foundation of power, because a lot of the imperatives that cause someone to decide, quote unquote, to syncretize are due to power relations. So one could be due to force, right? So that one should be very clear. You know, if you don't syncretize, I'll beat you or I'll whip you or any of these types of things. Then you also have coercion. It's just short of force. And then underneath that you have influence. So because you hold me in high esteem, that's why you're going to do it. Then you have manipulation. And this one is much more subtle. You don't even understand the reasons why you're doing it. You just know that you're doing it and you just think it's entirely you. However, certain things have been put into your environment or put into your mind to make you, you know, quote unquote, make that decision. And this is a framework from the psychologist Dr. Amos Wilson. He has a book called Blueprint for Black Power, where he goes into different levels of power. So now let's take it from force. So in terms of force, here you have a period such as enslavement or colonization. Especially in the case of enslavement, you have people who were prevented from practicing their own spiritual systems. And there were various types of punishments, you know, medieval types of punishments if they caught you practicing your own spiritual systems. Now, you had different things in different places. So, for example, after the Stonewall Rebellion, so this is in the United States, it's regarded as one of the first major uprisings. This took place in Stonewall, South Carolina. You had an African out of Angola, referred to in some of historical documents as Jimmy. And one of the things that the Africans did is that they used drums in order to signal to others. So just like we have Atumpang here, that they were able to communicate with others what they were going to do, how they were going to do it, all these types of things. And, you know, they were very successful. You know, they went to this plantation, burned this one, were able to defeat their enemies. But then, you know, they came across a militia. You know, the governor escaped. You know, they saw the governor on the horse. They were almost able to capture him. He escaped. They summoned a militia, and then they were able to suppress the rebellion. And one of the outcomes of this are what are referred to throughout times by different names, sometimes called the slave codes, black codes, etc. But basically what happened is that they outlawed various types of things. So because they realized that the role drumming had in terms of being able to communicate, you know, let's assemble Munkantwa and Munkantwa and Munkantwa, they wouldn't know what that is. They say, oh, they're just drumming, but they're saying get ready for battle. So these were some of the things. So especially after that, as a major turning point, this is where you have force, you know, and because of the force that if we catch you doing it, we'll lynch you. If we catch you doing this, we'll rip your tongue out of your mouth. If we catch you doing this, they would have other things where they would tie each one of your limbs to a horse. So this one, your legs, different horses. And then they whip all the horses at one time, and then they start to pull your body apart. So all that's left is a torso. So they had all types of tortures that they would do. They did a process that was called tarring and feathering. So you know the hot asphalt that they use in order to pave the streets. This made out of tar, so, or asphalt now. But they would take this black tar as it is scalding hot, right? So picture, you know, you have boiling water, right? And now this isn't water, this is tar, so it sticks to you. So they would pour this all over you, and as it's scalding you and melting your flesh away, then they would put feathers on it as well. So all of these were different types of tortures that they would use, you know, for Africans using their own spiritual systems, for Africans speaking their own languages and anything associated with Africa. But then you had other places like Brazil and some places in the Caribbean where some of the Europeans, they thought it would be a good idea for Africans to continue to do some of these things because they saw this as, you know, a continuation of those pre-colonial fragment identities. So as opposed to everyone coming to see, yeah, we're all black people, we're all in the same boat, let's do something against these whites. They saw some of these divisions as being helpful to them. So if you think you're Asante and you think you're Ewe, you think you're Yoruba, you think you're whatever, well, now you're not going to come together. So they saw that some of those types of practices would actually be helpful in subverting these black people from coming together as we're all Africans and fighting against the Eurasians. Now, in both cases, let's go back up to North America. So we came to South America. Let's now go back up to North America. You had, and we're coming back to the main point, which is syncretism. So you had a situation where you can't openly practice what you were practicing before. And because you can't openly practice, now you are forced to do certain other things. Now, again, this wasn't always the case. Early on in the practice of Christianity in the so-called New World in the Western Hemisphere, the idea was if you accept Christianity, then you can't be enslaved, right? If you accept Christianity, you can't be enslaved. But then you had one of the major historical figures was called Charles Colcock Jones. And what he did is, as some of these members of what are called this movement of the Great Awakening, was to come up with a rationale to say, even though you may convert to Christianity, we can keep you in enslavement. So with this, they came up with this idea of, we will free you spiritually, but we can still enslave you physically. So whereas before the law was very clear that as soon as you say, all right, I'm a Christian, I can't be enslaved, they said, no, we'll make it such that they can be Christians and enslaved. So here you're talking about late 1700s, early 1800s, which is where you had more of a movement, this so-called Great Awakening, to convert, you know, enslaved Africans who were still practicing their own spiritual systems to the best of their ability. So now they said, you know, we can use Christianity to help us enslave them. You understand? And this is exactly what they did. So this is part of the idea. When you see this image of a white Jesus, that's not the original image. If you go to Europe, you can see the original image. And it was black, the black Madonna and Child. This is black Mary, black Jesus. You can find somewhere between 400 to 500 of them all throughout Europe. However, what they decided to do is they're not going to show this to the African people who they are enslaving. What they're rather going to do is show the more recent image, which is the son of Pope Alexander VI. And the name of that is Caesar Borgia. So this was the model according to some of Caesar Borgia's contemporaries, such as Alexandre Dumas. If you've ever heard of Three Musketeers, you're talking about this author. They said that he was actually the model that Da Vinci and some of these other painters use for this modern Jesus. So you're talking around the late 1400s, early 1500s, that they decided, you know what, we're white, so why are we worshiping images of black people, right? Well, the reason why is because the original images of Jesus, Mary, Joseph, that originally those were modeled off of Heru, which was the son, that was the Jesus, Osset, which was the mother, and then Osar, which was the father. So they basically took this African spiritual system and embraced it wholesale. But then they started thinking, you know, why are we embracing African images? We should be worshiping people who look like us, white people. So now we're coming back up to date. This was the image that they decided to show to African people who they planned on enslaving. They could have said, let's show you the original image, which is black. But people who you want to enslave, first you have to make them think that everything that they are is bad and everything that you are is good. Once you do that, then you have certain side effects that come from that. One of the main things is self-hatred, and it comes out in various types of ways. And you can even see the effects of it today, where you have women who don't like their hair, and they never stop to think, why don't I like my hair? I'm supposed to believe in the Creator, and I'm supposed to think the Creator is perfect. However, if the Creator made me with natural human hair, no, that's a mistake you did. Let me try to look like a horse or a dog or anything that has mammal fur, right? So all of these things are coming to why they introduce a Christianity to do what we now see the effects, you know, of. So, you know, at this point, again, the Great Awakening is where you started to see a mass conversion of African people away from, before that, they were known as, oh, they're doing voodoo, they're doing, they're root doctors, they're doing whatever. But now this is where you have the, you know, foundation of various black churches, especially in the 1800s. Because before, if you're a Christian, you can't be enslaved. Now they say, no, you can be Christian and you'll get your pie in the sky, you know. Swing low, sweet chariot, like all of these songs that they're talking about. So we'll enslave you your all the days of your life, but then when you die, that's when you go and become free. However, African people, they were always looking for a way to become free. So they took that same Christianity, and then like Nat Turner, this was a revolutionary leader who fought against these whites and in no small part contributed to the ending of enslavement. Gabriel Prosser was another preacher, black preacher. Denmark Vesey is another. And what they started to do is that they would look, especially in the Old Testament, and they would try to find themselves somewhere in the Old Testament. Is it okay? Okay. They tried to find themselves in the Old Testament, so that's where they started to identify with the biblical Hebrews, where they say, okay, you know, our situation is just like the situation in the book. So in the book, they're saying, here are people who are enslaved, and they got out of enslavement. So they said, that's just like us. So then they started to identify with Hebrews and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Before this time, there was no identification. People like, you know, they wouldn't even know what it is. But again, all of this was part of this syncretism of trying to find something to help them liberate themselves with whatever few tools they have. So if all you have is a Bible, all right, well, let me use a Bible as a weapon. So you try to find some justification in it to how are you going to get free. And really, that's why African people really gravitated towards the Old Testament, because it has more themes about justice and all these other things, whereas the New Testament is more like turn the other cheek and those types of things. The ones like justice are the ones that black people like. It's unjust that they're whipping me every day, that they're raping my woman, that they're raping me, that they're sodomizing my children. This is unjust. So all of this is coming back to, because of force, that now makes people to try to find different ways to preserve the things that they were doing before in their own best interest, but to hide it in such a way enough that your enemies aren't going to be able to kill you because you're still holding on to what you were doing. So you had what were called ring shouts, which is basically the same thing as a kom, right? So the people would come together, they would dance, and they're saying they're getting the spirit, you know, the Holy Spirit, all these possessions. You hear people talking in tongues, and they would use that to cover the fact that they're still speaking their own African languages, right? So, and this is what's so ironic, that here in Ghana you have people who still know their own African languages, but then they start babbling, pretending like they're talking in tongues. Like, we were doing it so that we could actually speak our own languages and to hide it so that the whites couldn't rip out our tongues like they were doing. But here people are doing it, they're imitating what black people over there were doing, but it's like, no, you could actually speak Chi. You know, no one's going to whip you if you speak Ga, if you speak Ewe. But anyway, that's the whole idea, is trying to be able to do something. So then you have force. Now, usually in terms of force, they would make an example of, you know, some or several of the Africans. You know, if you're caught doing something African, then they would make an example of you. They would cut your head off and put it on a pole. You know, they would, you know, rape your woman. They would sodomize you in front of everyone. You know, sodomy, just taking a pole and, you know, shoving it up your rectum, all these types of things. But because it wasn't advantageous to do that to every single person on the plantation, this is where they use the second form of power that we mentioned, coercion. Now, in terms of coercion, this is the threat of force. So I'm not actually going to cut the heads off of every single African that I've enslaved, but I'll do it to enough that now the rest are going to be fearful, right? So now this is coercion. So now you're doing syncretism, not because you've been whipped, but because of the threat of being whipped, not because you've been lynched, not because you've been dismembered, but because of the threat of those types of things. So this is another impetus that makes people say, all right, well, let's syncretize. Let's try to hold on to whatever we can, to whatever degree we're able to trick them. But, you know, we have to do something. And what you found, let's come back down to Latin America, is that as they were doing this syncretism, that you would have them meld their own Abosom or Orisha, that's the Yoruba tradition, to the names of different saints. There's a song in Portuguese. It said, "O Negro religioso dentro de casa tem seu gonga." And it's the religious black man. Inside of his house, he has his gonga drum, right? So it's like you can't play it outside, but inside, you know, I'm going to keep my own drum. Salazar Omolu San Sojo Ogun Santa Ninana. So Lazarus is Ogun. Saint George, that's Saint George, is so Lazarus is Omolu, that's Babalu Aye. Saint George is Ogun, Santa is Nana. So they're, you know, in the song, and it's a pretty long song, so I don't have time to sing the whole thing.
Okay,
are we okay?
Yes, please.
You're recording me now?
Yeah. Not now. I think when you stop.
Okay, hold on. I want to find this song. So, pause and tell.
Okay.
It's actually worth playing because what it does, it goes through what the names of the saints are and what the names of the Orisha, that's the Yoruba tradition, what each one of those are. And it's very profound. This is what they play for, what's called capoeira. And capoeira is a combat science that they use to be able to defeat the Portuguese and ultimately end enslavement. They were able to fight off the Portuguese. And this is one of the songs that commemorates some of that history.
The song.
Okay, you can start. And I'll translate it as he's saying it. So the black religion inside of his house, he has his gonga drum. So because of captivity, he changed the names of the Orisha. So therefore, Dona Janani is the saint of conception, the lady of conception. Oshun is Candeia. Oshosi, Saint Lazarus is Omolu, Saint George is Omolu, Santana is Nana, Nana Bruku. Therefore, Saint Bartholomew is Oshumare, Saint Pedro or Peter is Shango, Oba is Joan of Arc, and Orishala is Our Lord. And long live my creator. And then they start going into it. So all this is coming out of Brazil. So, you know what, in different places you have people doing different ones. So like in Cuba, it would be slightly different. In Puerto Rico, it would be slightly different. But again, all these people are syncretizing, not because they want to, but because they're forced to, you know, or if it's not direct force, it's coercion. Now, we mentioned force, we mentioned coercion, then comes influence. So now these are people who, you know, because they see this white man, and this is the religion of the white man, they say, oh, the white man is powerful. If I want to be powerful like the white man, I'll do what the white man is doing. So then they start to do, you know, the religion, whether or not it makes sense for them to do it or not, they start imitating, you know, their oppressors. They start imitating. So here's... So now this is influence. Mm-hmm. So now this is where you have, you know, especially after this point of saying, you know what, we can just tell them that they'll be liberated in the sweet by and by. After they die, they'll get their pie in the sky in heaven. They'll be suffering all the days of their life. But now, after they die, they'll have another white man over on top of them, you know, at that point. So, you know, for some people, you know, they rejected that. For others, they have that influence of, okay, here's this preacher, here's this, you know, master who is saying that things will get better for me if only I convert. Now, even after some people converted, they realized that they were still being raped. They realized that, you know, they're still being sodomized, they're still being amputated, they're still having all these things going on. Like if you run away, they cut off a leg. If you do this, if you speak an African language, they cut out your tongue. So they, you know, said, you know what, this isn't the way to go. And they attempted to run away and establish free societies. Mm-hmm. So in Brazil, you have what we'll call quilombos. Quilombo is a word from Kikongo language, the language of the Congo Empire. So they would set up what was called a quilombo. The most famous of these was called Palmares. So that way they didn't have to, you know, do things based on the force or the coercion or the influence. They were able to, as best as they could remember, try to reconstruct their African identities that they had, you know, prior to being enslaved and kidnapped and taken there. And then in some of the Spanish places, they called those same types of societies palenques, but it's the same thing. African people who were able to run into the mountains or into inaccessible places and then establish some of the first free republics in the Western Hemisphere. So, you know, when we think, oh, freedom and these types of things, democracy, people think about places like the U.S., mm-hmm. but at the time of Palmares, we're talking about 1500s, you know, and, you know, somewhere going slightly into the 1600s. And these were the first free republics in the Western Hemisphere, because at that time, you know, what would later become the United States was still an enslaving empire. And as many people don't know, it's still legal to practice slavery in the United States. According to the 13th Amendment, it says slavery shall not exist unless after you've been convicted of a crime, right? So they worded it in such, as a matter of fact, a documentary just came out about this, and I wrote a paper on this last year, that, you know, they were very clear that they were wording it in that way so that they could go back and enslave the black people again. So anytime it's time to pick cotton, they will arrest you for sitting there. And now you're still legally enslaved, you're working for free, right? So there's a, you can look up Worse Than Slavery, a book called Worse Than Slavery. You can look at a documentary called Slavery by Another Name. But, you know, at the time that these, you know, white people were still enslaving African people, we were setting up free republics, we were setting up places where people could come to and be free. So you found this in, you know, Latin America. We mentioned Brazil and some of the Spanish places. There's one of the leaders of rebellion in what's now Mexico, Gaspar Yanga, was, you know, one of those who was able to set it. So these are people who are saying, we don't want to do this syncretism type of thing. We don't want to live under this European hegemony. We want to be free. So to be free, you know, we're going to get out from under your hegemony. And so we've looked at influence. Influence is basically like saying, because whites are powerful, I'll do whatever they say do, right? You're taking authority to be the truth, right? You don't care, or you don't have the luxury of saying, I'm going to stand on what's true. You're just saying, because I'm in this situation, I'll just do it. And then you have manipulation, and this is the highest form. This is what we're dealing with even now today. This is where people will, you know, just say, you know, I'm seeing that all of the rich people are in Christianity, right? So if I want to be rich, guess what? Right, so it's not necessarily anyone telling you have to do it, but you see a billboard, and here's this preacher who has, you know, his three-piece suit, and, you know, he's standing in front of a Mercedes-Benz, and so all of these things that are surrounding you and put into your environment are all put there, and again, all of it goes to ultimately enrich the same white people who introduced it to you in the first place. So now, once you want to do all the things like this rich preacher man does, where do you go to get your preacher man Mercedes-Benz? Who do you pay for that? Where do you go to get your preacher man private jet? You understand? Where do you have to go to get your preacher man Jerry Curl and whatever you understand? Where do you go to get your suit and tie and your robes and all the... All of these things enrich the same people who gave it to you in the first place in order to colonize you and enslave you, right? So they're still the beneficiaries today, and that's the whole reason. So anytime someone gives you something, they're thinking about, how is it going to benefit me? You understand? So let's look at all of the things that they took away from us. They said your language, we know that that's valuable. That's something that you can use to free yourself, so we'll take that away. You know, the drums, will take that away. Your cultural practices will take that away. Your spiritual practices will take that away. So if they took away everything that is valuable to an African, that would make you think logically, well, why would they give you Christianity? We're taking away everything that's valuable, and therefore we're giving you Christianity. What does that tell you about the value of that for African people? Now, that doesn't mean that we haven't tried to make it valuable. So like I mentioned, Nat Turner was a preacher, and he fought against, you know, this enslavement. He said, you know, this is all I have. I'm going to use it, you know, to the best of my ability. But again, as we're looking at syncretism, we're looking at the causes of syncretism. So we mentioned force, we mentioned coercion, we mentioned influence, we also mentioned manipulation. And these are the things that cause, you know, or has caused people to say, you know, let me syncretize because I can't do it. And I actually gave a talk last semester on different African combat sciences, things that we use to defend ourselves during that period and up to now. And I gave an analogy of two different types of mattresses, you know, like you sleep on mattresses. And one is made out of a natural type of rubber called latex. And in the video, I showed like a short clip. In the video, if you put something like heavy, like a big heavy bowling ball or a weight on it, as soon as you remove it, it pops back up.
Yeah.
That's something natural. As soon as you remove it, it pops back up, right? But then there are those that are made of what they call memory foam. It's like a chemical synthetic type of composition. For those ones, if you put this weight on it, it stays. You take it off and it stays low. Mm-hmm. It takes so long before it can start to even look like it's about to come back. And this is essentially what we have. We say that, okay, slavery was, you know, at some point in time in the past, even though we know it still exists under different names. Colonization, that was sometime in the past, but we know that it still exists, you know, in different forms. But we're looking at the difference between a natural reaction to its, you know, at least its transformation versus an unnatural reaction to it, right? So what would be natural is that as soon as you're able to force these Eurasians to stop enslaving you in that way, you would think you would go back to doing what you were fighting to do the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what we have. What we have is people still clinging on to the thing that was forced on us originally. So if we were natural, yeah, if we were in a natural type of setting, oh, Dr. Chen, wait until I change the voice. If we were still natural Africans, that's what you would have. But because we are, you know, manipulated, homogenized types of mixed up Africans, we're more like this memory type of foam. It's a chemical composition. So now even at the end of so-called colonialism, right, 1957, we're still in this position. they're no longer having to force you or coerce you or influence you. They'll still manipulate you, but they don't have to do any of those because you're so used to it. You're so used to being oppressed. Now you think that that's all that there's ever been, and that's all that there ever can be, because since you were born, all you know is that. All through your life, that's all you know, so therefore, you know, you adhere to it. So now you have a case where even though you wouldn't need to syncretize, you do it because, you know, that's all that you know about. And this is the role about miseducation, diseducation, and anti-education. These are the three agendas that are being propagated against the African. And essentially what these are is not letting you know anything about anything African. That's diseducation. So if I ask you, what's the creation story of your people? You understand? If you're Akan, if you're Ewe, if you're God, what's your own creation story? You may be hard-pressed to tell me, but you could probably tell me about Adam and Eve. You understand? This is intentional, because once you don't know anything about yourself, now you will act in certain ways, right? You will have to buy chemicals to be like who's good. You'll have to wear clothes to be like who's good. You'll have to speak a language to be like who's good. And all of that enriches those who gave you that type of mindset in the first place. You understand? So, you know, you have all of these things that are going on in terms of the syncretism, in terms of the current modern day manipulation that goes on, that now, even though you don't quote unquote have to do it, you're still doing it. So I've gone around. Hopefully that has given you a little bit of a background. And do you have any other questions or anything that wasn't clear?
Okay, so if we come to in our days now, has the syncretism had any effects, either positive or negative, on the people? And most especially pertaining to the people of Latin America now. And then, since they are not under any force to syncretize, do you think there is any way that they can go back to practicing their own religions?
The challenge with that, I'll start from that one and then work my way back to the benefits or detriments. That the challenge with that is manipulation is much more effective than force, right? You're saying they're not being forced, but it's much harder to combat manipulation, because one thing is you don't even know that it's going on. You understand? If someone is forcing you, if I'm saying, take this Bible or I'll beat you, the natural response is saying, no, you won't. And then you fight back. You understand? Coercion saying, I'm about to beat you, right? So force, I'm actually beating you and saying, take this. That, you know, that will provoke some type of response. You know, this one, I'm about to beat you. No, even there, you see the antagonism, you'll kick against that one. Now the influence, it still has an impact, but you can say, you know what? I don't like that image, I'm going to go back. But the manipulation is much more pervasive, because now you think it's you who wants to do the thing, right? I've shown you this image of Caesar Borgia every day of your life. It's on the back of every trotro, everywhere you've gone. All you've seen is Caesar Borgia, and you think it's Jesus, right? So now, you know, you've never been taught anything other than that. So because of that, you think that, I just want to do this. That's my own choice. That's my own decision. Without realizing that you have the diseducation, which is not telling you anything about who you are. The miseducation is telling you the wrong thing, which is everything that African people do is evil and demonic and bad and satanic and blah, 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 blah. That's telling you the wrong thing, right? And they were telling you that because they realized that you could use that in order to fight them. You could use that in order to get their colonization off of you. So they want to take away every instrument, every tool of liberation that you could possibly use, and leave you only with this image of Caesar Borgia, who looks exactly like your enemy who's sitting there in the dungeons and enslaving you. You understand? So now, will you fight against someone who looks exactly like this thing that you're worshiping? Would you? Say, this is the only begotten son of the one who created everything, the sun and the moon and the stars. This is the only son. He looks just like me. Are you going to fight against me now? This is the whole point. So they're not doing it to save your soul. They're not doing it to help you. They're not doing it for any altruistic reason. They're doing it because they're saying, we're going to steal your people and use them to build up America, which is why it's so built up, and the UK, which is why it's so built up, and France and all these other places. Those people who would otherwise have been building up Africa, now they are building up America. The White House was built by enslaved Africans. You understand? All of these things that you think of when you think of these places that were built by enslaved Africans, because those were the architects, those were the engineers, they had all those skills from Africa, but now instead of building up Africa, they're building up, you know, over there. So the miseducation, diseducation, and anti-education. Anti-education is really what comes about after manipulation. So now because you've been manipulated so long that you think that this is your own thought, oh, I just want to pray to Caesar Borgia's image, right? Now you'll fight against anyone who gives you the actual information because you're against education now. You don't want any knowledge because the only way you can keep doing what you're doing is to live in abject ignorance, to not know anything about Africa and not know anything about what your enemies have been doing to get inside of your head. You understand? So anti-education is really you being affected by all this manipulation. Now, we're talking about, would it be easy or would it be possible for them to get out of it now that there's not force? It's actually more difficult to get out of it now that there's not force. Force is the most, how would I say it, unsophisticated, you know, of these different types of power. It's easier to get out of it when there is force because you will fight against it, which is why they had to end enslavement. Within 1 year of the British being beaten in Haiti, that's when they decided to end the quote-unquote slave trade, right? As a direct result of them getting beaten, over 12,000 British soldiers were killed because, you know, at that point in time, you have Britain and France, they were at war. So what Britain said is, you know what, Saint Domingue is the French colony, a former French colony. Oh, hold on 1 second. Tata? How was it? Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Cool, cool. I'm doing well. I'm actually doing an interview that some of the students here at Legon wanted to know about syncretism. So I'm trying to break some of that down for them. But yeah, I actually did want to see you. I had some questions that I didn't get a chance to ask at the interview. Are you still in question answering mode? Okay. Not right now. Right now, I'm actually still in the middle of it. Okay. No problem. But you're there this evening. Okay, wonderful. I'll see if maybe I can stop by if it's not any imposition. Yeah, that no problem. Great. That'd be wonderful. Okay, good. So welcome back. I'm glad you traveled safely. All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. So I was saying that it's more difficult now that there isn't the force. Now that there's less coercion, it's not that there's no coercion, there's less coercion. And as they're bringing down the level of direct force, they're raising the level of manipulation, right? So now you think all the things you want to do, you just want to do, without ever thinking, how come everything I want to do enriches my enemy? The clothes I just happen to want to wear, who do I have to buy that from? The things I just happen to want to do to my hair, who do I have to go to get the chemicals, you know, to do that? The chemicals to make my skin look like a pig, you know, to make my hair look like dog fur. Who do I have to go to, you understand? And you think that this is just my own thought without realizing in entertainment, every Hollywood movie I've seen, they said the word beauty, and then they showed this woman with fur that looks like a dog swinging the fur around. And you just say, oh, I just love it. You understand? You don't realize that that's where they planted the seed of that desire. They created a taste and a desire inside of you to want to look like something other than what the Creator made you. So basically, by default, you're saying, Creator, you're wrong. You made a mistake. So let me correct that for you. and those, the people who do that are the main ones who you'll find in the middle of the church and saying, oh, how wonderful, how wonderful. You understand? But they're blaspheming against their own temple that was created perfectly already. You understand? So again, my simple answer after all that background is that it's more difficult to get out from it now. All right. But then, by the same token, everything's strength is its weakness at the same time. Whatever you look at, the strength of that thing is also its weakness, right? What I mean by that is because they are not following it up with direct force, you understand? Now, it could possibly happen that now you have knowledge introduced to you, right? And you can run with that new knowledge that you have, right? And there's no one who's going to shoot you for taking out that knowledge. So it's so effective because there's not a gun around to shoot you. And you think that you're the one who's thinking all of these things just magically. I just want to do this. However, now let's introduce some knowledge. Because there isn't a gun to let you kick against it and say, no, you're not going to shoot me. You understand? Now, that same thing that is the strength that I'm able to just manipulate your environment, that now becomes a weakness because the force isn't able to back it up. You understand? In terms of whether there are benefits or detriments, the benefits are primarily for white people, which is why anytime you want to think about who benefits from something, think about who originates it, right? And you can also, another way of, you know, sifting through that is to follow the money trail, right? When you're saying who benefits from it, the first thing you can think about is who benefits economically from it. You understand? Where do you have to buy your cement from to build your church? Where do you have to go to get the robes and, you know, choir stuff and all this other stuff you're going to be wearing? Where do you have to go to get your crosses and your Bibles? Who's printing those Bibles? So there are all these cottage industries that surround the fact that you have been taught to hate everything that's African. So you are enriching exponentially not only, you know, the preacher who's standing in front of you, but everyone who is printing these Bibles, right? You are now the dumping ground that's enriching all those people. So they're able to send their children to school. Their children aren't even Christian. They're like, hey, we know all that's just rubbish that we came up with in the 1400s. That's passé. Let's go to the moon now. Let's do other stuff now. But they're using your colonized mind in order to finance these other things that they're doing, right? So the money that they get from the Bible is now going to go into a jet fighter that's bombing Libya, right? The money that comes from all of your choir robes, just look at Ghana alone. Think about how many robes are in Ghana. If it doesn't amount to millions upon millions, I would be shocked. of dollars, if not pounds or euros or whatever you want to convert it into. So let's just look at the robes before anything else. All of that money went somewhere. And now the money that's going there is being used by the same white people who gave you that in order to finance all the other things that you're doing. So there's a quote by Jomo Kenyatta, and sometimes it's ascribed to other people who've said it in other ways, but they say, when the white man came to Africa, they had the Bible and we had the land. They told us to kneel down and pray and close our eyes. We did so. When we opened our eyes, we had the Bible, they had the land. They were very clear on what's valuable and what's not valuable. So the land that has gold, diamonds, platinum, everything else, we'll exchange that for this paper, right? It's a tree we chopped up, put down some mythology and story tales, Anansisim, and now when you believe it, you'll say, oh, wonderful, I'm glad I got this, so don't mind this thing. So the thing is, you know, sometimes you hear people say, oh, the white people are very clever or they're smart or whatever. If you really believe that, then you would have to understand, then they were smart to say, we'll give you something that's valueless in exchange for something that's valuable, right? If you want to believe that, you have to follow its logical implications of them giving you something and that's not valuable in order to take something that's infinitely valuable, right? So the main benefits go towards these Eurasians. And again, you can look at it economically. Another way you can look at it is psychologically. What type of psychological boost do I get as a quote unquote white person when all of these black people are worshiping me? I don't know if you've ever been to rural Ghana or even urban Ghana and see a white man or woman walking around. All of the children will run out of there. They will stop eating. They will stop whatever they're doing, even if they've been starving for a week, to run after this white man or white woman. What type of psychological boost does that give to them to know that all these African people are under me? You understand? It's like I'm a potentate. I'm like my own king or queen, just by the fact that I look like the image that I gave you, right? So I'm the chosen people according to the book that I wrote. So if it works like that, I may write a book tomorrow and say, guess what? I'm the chosen people. And I'll shoot you if you say anything else. And if I shoot enough people, all the people who are left will say, yes, you're the chosen people, right? So that's the force. But then because man and woman are creatures of habit, now you'll get so used to it that one generation, they don't even remember the gun. They just think what we're doing now is all it's ever been. And then they also see a cost-benefit analysis, rewards and punishments, that those same white people are saying, we'll give you the crumbs that fall off of our table, right? In exchange for you saying that I look just like the Supreme Being, right? So the fact that I own all your platinum, all your diamonds, all your whatever, I'll allow you to have a 4x4, right? I could make a 4x4 out of solid gold that I took from your land, but I'll give you, you know, this rusted tin and aluminum and junk. And you say, oh, thank you, white man, for the crumbs. Thank you for the crumbs that have fallen from your table. And then we'll argue amongst each other about whatever crumbs we're able to get. You understand? And we'll say, oh, our problem is corruption and whatever. Now, this is ridiculous because there's a whole feast on the table that they stole from us. And the corruption we're talking about is this crumb fell down here and this one wants to get more out of that crumb than someone else. And we're never addressing this whole feast that's on the table. So we're bickering back and forth between whatever, NDC, MPP, CPP, BBB, blah, blah, blah. We're arguing about this crumb and saying this one wants to keep it for his village. But we're not arguing about all of this whole feast that's been stolen from our garden, that's been stolen from our farm. When do we say that that's a problem? So now let's come back to Latin America specifically. I answered, you know, the benefits. The main detriments, well, now let's talk about the benefits in the past of the syncretism, that in a lot of these places, initially Haiti, they, at the beginning of the Haitian Revolution, Boukman was one of the main leaders, and he had a quote where he said, throw away the image of the white man's God who has brought us so much suffering, and listen to the voice of liberty which speaks in all our hearts. So what they were using indigenous African spirituality in order to fight against these whites, right? Now, since that time, you've had various invasions of white religion, Catholicism and everything else you can imagine. Since that point in time, Haiti started off as the richest colony in the Western Hemisphere. At that point in time, it was the richest colony, richer than what would become the United States or anything else in the whole Western Hemisphere. But as they moved away from the African spiritual system, they got progressively weaker and weaker and weaker. And this is, you know, not to discount the economic sanctions that France had them pay the debt for themselves. They said, you used to be our property, so you have to pay for the loss of French property, right? So, you know, again, we can see a downward trajectory from African spirituality to, as they become more and more Christian, they suffer more and more and more and more. But then, you know, I also mentioned examples of people trying to use Christianity to get out of enslavement, to lead rebellions and revolutions and so forth and so on. In my opinion, the majority, the lion's share of the benefits come from, again, following the money trail. And, you know, not only the economics, but also in the area of psychology we mentioned, in the area of health, because now all the chemicals that are seeping into your scalp because you want to look like, you know, a dog or a horse or something else, now there are health effects that come from that. Now you have fibroid tumors. So now who do you have to go to cure your cancer? You understand? Now you have brain cancer. who do you have to go to? So they also benefit in the area of health. You understand? And, you know, we can look at every single area of human activity. We can see in the area of education, I see these books that say, who is this an image of? And it's an image of Caesar Borgia, but it doesn't have the name Caesar Borgia. It'll say, this is Jesus. And if you want to get it right, you better say that. The benefits of colonization. So they're producing textbooks in order to buttress all of the lies that they've told you already. So again, you can see, again, the lion's share of benefits going to our enemies, and then the lion's share of detriments coming towards we Africans. And again, if you create something, you're creating it in your own best interest. So now let's look at African spiritual systems. Those were given to us by our ancestors for our own best interest. So they would have, this is a sacred grove, you understand? That ensures that for perpetuity, all throughout time, that this will be here for African people. They'll say, this is a sacred river, this is a sacred lagoon. While we were doing that, the environment was fine. Now look today, everyone is Christian, and this river that used to be a sacred river now looks like a dump. This lagoon that used to be a sacred lagoon, where people who I know who are old enough to remember, they say, I remember when I was young, I used to take water from it and drink from it. If you took water and drink from it now, it would just fall through and just burn like acid all the way, and it would come out of your foot. You understand? So that was the spiritual system that was created by African people for the best interests of African people. You can also look at, according to scientists, they say hominids, this is, you know, Homo sapiens and all the other various forms, have been in their hominid form going back to like the time of Dinknesh, is what they call Lucy, right? The mitochondrial Eve and all these other ones. So these are dated to like 3 million years plus, right? So African people were living with elephants for 3 million years plus. So there were elephants roaming around. You still have proverbs talking about, this is the elephant, this is what you do with the elephant, blah, blah. You won't find an elephant in Accra or Kumasi or anywhere else other than this limited game reserve. You understand? Paga or whatever, wherever. You understand? So you went from a place where these animals were abounded to within 100 years, all of them are decimated. You understand? Because the spiritual system you practiced before, part of it is the idea of sacrifice, as opposed to me eating every single thing that I can get into my mouth. I say I have to leave some for the future generations. So instead of eating every seed, no, here's a granary, and this is so that when I reincarnate, there will be some seed for me to eat at that point in time. This is why you have names like Nana Yao, Abebio, and all these things. It has an idea of reincarnation, because even if you want to be selfish, it's built in that, all right, I'm thinking about myself when I come back. You understand? This is the thinking. And we go back to the animals. Within 100 years, all of these animals, whether it's lions, leopards, gazelles, they went from being abundant throughout, you know, the countryside, to within 100 years of getting Christianity, almost no, some of them are completely extinct. Not a single one exists. You understand? So this is the difference. The lion's share of benefits from African spiritual systems accrue to African people. The lion's share of because you created it for you to benefit. Are you going to give your own child a loaded gun? Are you going to give your own grandchild a knife? You understand? Here's a machete. You're 1 year old. Here's a machete. Play with it. Right? This is what our African ancestors were doing. They were giving you something that would benefit African people, and it worked just like that for millions and millions and millions of years. But within 100 years of you getting one that was created by your enemy to destroy you, now everything is destroyed. Your environment is destroyed. Flora, fauna, your own psychology, your sense of self, your self-esteem. Do you think black is good or white is good? You understand? Who taught you that black is this and white is that? And what are the benefits, you know, for them once you believe what you believe? And then also, when do you come to understand that that idea that black is bad in their concept, you don't even realize that that's not a universal concept. So if you go to the Songhe language, anytime they want to say something is pure or powerful or good, they say it's a black this thing. If you go to the Nile Valley, all of their deities are painted black, right? From Osar to Anpu, what they call Anubis, all of them are black. This is the idea that what's sacred, what's divine, is just like you. You understand? So there's a quote by Dr. Yosef Ben Yochanan, the late Yosef Ben Yochanan, that's his image on the right-hand side. He said, religion is the deification of someone's culture. That's here. Religion is the deification of someone's culture, right? Now, let me give you an example. If in my culture I live in a desert environment, right, there's no water, then, of course, I can't have a culture about swimming in pools and whatever, right? So now let's look at Islam. People say it's holy to, for them to take a small portion of water and just wash off ablution, their hands and their feet. That's because the people whose culture that is a desert culture, right? Now, how does that fit for people who live near the river Pra? They have rivers all around them, you understand? So what's in my culture is that on my Krada, which is my soul day, I go and bathe in that river, you understand? So whatever culture you come from in that environment, what's around you is sacred. So if you come from a desert, now you say everything that desert people do is sacred. And even if you live in a place where water is abundant, you still have to act like you're in the desert. I hope you're following along. So these are some of the things that we can think of. So again, I think I've answered all of the questions, but the benefits, the majority of them go to, you know, Eurasians. That's why they gave it to you, so that they could benefit, and they still do benefit in very concrete ways. The benefits for our own thing accrue primarily to African people. That's the reason why your ancestors gave it to you, so that you could benefit in very concrete ways. Mm-hmm. Now, we can look at the 1%, the fuzzy boundary, and say, oh, well, maybe I get a crumb from the table. You understand? And these are the preachers who are, for lack of a better word, pimping the rest of the people the fact that they don't know anything, right? Rather than letting you know about anything African, let's just keep building on the fact that you're completely ignorant, and I'll enrich myself based on your ignorance. You understand? That's the 1% who gets some type of benefit from that. So basically, there are terms like sellouts. That means you're selling your people in order to get something to feed yourself, right? That is beneficial, quote-unquote, for them individually in the short term, but it's detrimental for the whole in the long term. You understand? Then on the African side, you can see some type of maybe minute benefit that a European could get from our practicing. Like, they'll write articles about it. They say, I'll build my whole career on African studies. Then at the end of the day, they know more about Africa than the person who is their own thing. You understand? So they've gotten some type of benefit. So we could see those types of things, but we shouldn't get lost in the fuzzy examples, these few 1-2 examples at the border, and not see the forest because of the trees. We missed the whole thing because we're trying to find this 1-2 benefit there. Yeah. I hope it's been educative.
Very,
very. Very good.
Very, very.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So let me give you this recording. Any other question? Are we okay? You said Dr. Kambam talks long, so if I ask another question, I won't eat this evening. All right.